Chapter 45. The Cerberus offices in Washington were housed in a large mansion that had been built for a wealthy senator from California in 1910. Set on 10 acres on the fringe of Bethesda and surrounded by a high vine-covered brick wall, the mansion-turned office building did not contain Spartan offices for the conglomerate's engineers, scientists, or geologists. The 4 floors of lavish suites were filled with corporate attorneys, political analysts, high-level lobbyists, and influential former senators and congressmen, all working to increase Zale's grip on the United States government. At 1 o'clock in the morning, a van advertising an electrical contractor pulled up to the gate and was passed through. Security was tight. 2 guards manned the house at the front gate while 2 more patrolled the grounds with attack dogs. The van eased to a stop in a parking slot near the front door. A large black man walked toward the entrance with a long box containing fluorescent light tubes. He signed in at the guard reception desk and took an elevator to the 4th floor, where he stepped across a teak floor covered with expensive hand-woven Persian rugs. There was no secretary in the foyer of the large office at the end of the hallway. She had left for home an hour earlier. He passed her empty desk and entered a spacious office whose door was open. Curtis Merlin Zale was seated in a huge leather executive chair, studying a geologist's seismic reports on a previously undiscovered oil and gas field in Idaho. He did not look up as the electrician entered. Instead of installing the light tubes, the electrician boldly sat down in a chair in front of the desk. Only then did Zale look up into the dark, sinister eyes of Omo Kanai. "Was your distrust validated?" asked Kanai. Zale smiled smugly. "The unsuspecting fish took the bait. May I ask who?" "Sally Morse of Yukon Oil. I began to doubt her dedication to the cause when she raised questions over our plan to ram the supertanker into the heart of San Francisco." "Do you think she talked to authorities?"
"I'm certain of it. Her plane did not return to Alaska, but flew to Washington."
"A loose cannon in the Capitol could be dangerous." Zale shook his head. "She has no documentation. Only her word. Nothing can be proved. Little does she suspect that she did us a great service by turning renegade and defecting." "If she testifies before Congress," said Kanai, without finishing his thought, "if you handle your end, she'll have an accident before she can be interrogated." "Has the government put her in a safe house?" "Our sources inside the Justice Department say they have no knowledge of her whereabouts." "Any idea where she can be found?" Zale shrugged.
"None at the moment. She must be hiding with private parties."
"Then she won't be easy to find," said Kanai.
"I'll locate her for you," said Zale confidently. "I have more than 100 of our people looking for her. It's only a question of hours."
"When is she due to testify before the committee?"
"Not for another 3 days."
Kanai appeared satisfied.
"I assume all is in readiness," Zale said. "There can be no oversight, no unforeseen problems."
"I expect none. Your scheme is brilliant. The operation is planned down to the tiniest detail. I see no room for failure."
"Your Viper team is on board?"
"All except me. A helicopter is waiting to carry me to the tanker when it is 100 miles out." Kanai glanced at his watch. "If I am to direct the final preparations, I must be leaving."
"The military cannot stop the tanker?" Zale asked, hopefully.
"Those who try will be in for a rude awakening." They stood and shook hands.
"Good luck, Omo. Next time we meet, the U.S. government will have its strings pulled by new hands. And where will you be during the Holocaust tomorrow? A sharp grin curled Zale's lips. I will be testifying before Congresswoman Smith. Do you think she knows about your designs on domestic oil? Sally Morse has no doubt revealed our agenda to her. Zale turned and stared out the window at the twinkling lights and the floodlit monuments of the Capitol. But by this time tomorrow, it won't matter. Public outcry over foreign oil and gas will have surged like a tidal wave across the nation, and all resistance against Cerberus will have been swept aside. When Lauren walked from her office in the Congressional Office Building into the hearing room, she was stunned as she stared at the table reserved for those subpoenaed to appear before her committee. There was no army of Cerberus corporate attorneys, no platoon of company directors or officials. Curtis Merlin Zale sat alone behind the table. No papers or notes were laid out on the surface before him. No briefcase on the floor. He simply relaxed casually in his chair, immaculately suited, and smiled at the members of Congress as they entered and sat down at the raised desks above the main floor of the hearing room. His eyes strayed to Lauren as she sat down and laid a sheaf of papers on her desktop. She caught him staring at her, and she suddenly felt unclean. Despite his attractive looks and impeccable attire, she found him repulsive, like a venomous snake sunning itself on a rock. She looked over to see if the other members of the committee were settled in their chairs and ready to begin the proceedings. She exchanged looks with Congressman Leonard Sturgis, who nodded politely, but his face appeared strained, as if he was leery of having to go through the motions of asking tough questions of Zale. Lauren said a few preliminary words to open the investigation and then thanked Zale for appearing. You realize, of course, that you have the privilege of appearing with counsel, she advised him. Yes, he said in a calm voice, but in the spirit of full cooperation and disclosure, I sit here before you ready to answer fully any and all questions. Lauren glanced up at the big clock on the far wall of the hearing chamber. It read 9:10 a.m. The proceedings may run most of the day, she informed Zale. I am at your disposal for as long as it takes, said Zale in a quiet voice. Lauren turned to Congresswoman Lorraine Hope of Texas. Congresswoman Hope, would you do the honor of beginning the investigation? Lorraine Hope, a heavy black woman from the Galveston shore of Texas, nodded and launched the proceedings. Lauren knew that Hope's name was not on the list of those bought off by Cerberus, but she couldn't be positive of Hope's views on the company. Up to this point, her probes had been moderate and seemingly independent. But that was soon to change, now that she was confronted by Zale himself. Mr. Zale, is it your position that the United States would be far better off if we became self-sufficient in domestic oil and did not require the importing of foreign crude from the Middle East and Latin America? Oh, God, thought Lauren. She's playing right into his hands. Our reliance on foreign oil, began Zale, is draining the economy. For the past 50 years, we have been at the mercy of OPEC, who has played with market prices like a yo-yo. Their insidious ploy was to raise the price of a barrel of oil by $2, then drop it one. Raise it two, and drop it one. Keeping the price edging slowly up and up until we are now looking at nearly $60 a barrel for every barrel of imported oil. Prices at the gas pump are outrageous. Trucking companies and drivers who own their trucks are going under.
Prices for airline tickets have skyrocketed because of higher aviation jet fuel prices. The only way to stop this madness that will eventually break the country is to develop our own fields and not have to rely on outside oil. Are there enough reserves underground to support American needs, and if so, for how long? Asked Lorraine Hope. Indeed, Zale said boldly. There is more than enough oil in the continental United States and Canada, plus offshore oil reserves, to make North America completely self-sufficient for the next 50 years. I can also announce at this time that the enormous shale oil deposits throughout Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana will be ready to process into crude oil within the next year. This alone will keep us from ever again becoming reliant on foreign oil. Then perhaps, by the middle of the century, technology will perfect alternative sources of power. Are you saying that there should be no environmental considerations in opening new fields? Asked Lauren. The environmental protests are vastly overstated, retorted Zale. Few, if any, animals have died because of oil drilling rigs or pipelines. Migratory trails can be altered by wildlife management experts. There is no contamination on the ground or in the sky due to drilling. And most important, by keeping foreign oil off our shores, we can eliminate the kind of tragedies that we've seen with the Exxon Valdez and the other oil spills the nation has suffered in the last few years. Without the need for tankers to bring oil into the United States, that threat is eliminated. You make a strong case, said Congressman Sturgis. I, for one, lean toward your scenario. I've always been against blackmail by the foreign oil cartels. If American oil companies can supply the country's needs without leaving our shores, I'm in favor of it. What about the companies bringing up oil from around the world and shipping it into our ports and refineries? Demanded Lauren. If their flow to the United States is cut off, they'll most likely go broke. Zale didn't look the least bit disconcerted. They'll simply have to sell their output to other countries. The questions were given out, and the answers returned. Zale, Lauren could see, was not about to be daunted. He well knew that he controlled 3 of the 5 members on the Unfair Practices Committee, and he felt in total control. Except for occasionally sneaking a look at his wristwatch, he was completely unfazed. Lauren lifted her eyes to the clock on the far wall just as often. She found it almost impossible to keep her mind from wandering to the disaster approaching San Francisco and wondered if the Coast Guard and Special Forces were going to stop it in time. It was especially discouraging, knowing she could not confront Zale with her knowledge and accuse him in advance of attempted mass murder.